Got it. Okay. Hello, Morro Bay, and welcome to the October 16th edition of Public Works Advisory Board. Please be advised that all members are here except for Marlis McPherson, and she is out of town, but she will return for our next meeting. And so with that, we establish a quorum and call the meeting to order. Could we please have a moment of silence? Okay, moving on. Next, we have announcements. Anybody on the board have any announcements to make? Yes, sir.
Yes, I do. Thank you. Since we last met, you'd picked me to go to the water reclamation facilities,
Citizens Advisory Committee.
Thank you, Citizens Advisory Council. And we've had two meetings since then. I saw it in the director's report, and I think you'll have a little bit more chance to ask, staff on that portion of it. But I just wanted to bring up, we've had two meetings thus far. Basically, the structure of the committee has been set up, as well as they've run two reports by us of the technical nature, one covering the grants that may be available, and the other covering the permitting process, because they've basically whittled down the two sites, basically to the Rancho Colina Mobile Estates. It's about 1,000 feet north of it, up 41 on the left-hand side, and the other one's at the CMC, the Men's Colony out there, and that would be a shared facility if that's the way they go. The reason I'm bringing it up to you is because before we meet again, there's a lot of meetings going on. There'll be two more within the next 3 weeks of that committee. And then it's going to the City Council. I think it's November 12th, is it not, Rob?
Yes, that would be. We have a report on groundwater coming to this next City Council meeting, and then a final decision point on the November 12th meeting.
That's what So on November 12th is when they're trying to make the final decision. So I'm just making you aware. If this is something you've been following, it's happening at a very fast pace. So I just wanted to make you all aware as we go forward. Thank you.
All right. No, that's really good to know, Stephen. Thank you. Do we have any other announcements? No. All right. Moving on, we now move on to presentations, and our first presentation is from Regional Transit Authority. Their proposal to increase roundabout fares and ways for community members to provide input. So please, with no further ado.
Thank you, members of the Public Works Advisory Board. My name is Jeff Straw. I'm the Executive Director of the San Luis Obispo Regional Transit Authority, and I appreciate your giving me a chance to talk with you tonight. First, I want to give you a little bit of background. In order to use runabout, a rider first must fill out an application, an eligibility application to ride the service. The service is dedicated to persons who cannot otherwise ride fixed route services. The Americans with Disabilities Act requires that we operate the service within 3/4 of a mile of any fixed route service within the county. So in this area here, we operate the route 15 that goes up to Cambria, as well as a Route 12 that connects Morro Bay with Los Osos and San Luis Obispo. And then the local service is operated by Morro Bay Transit, the fixed route, particularly the trolley. We must operate within 3/4 of a mile within those areas. So why are we considering a fare increase? Well, fares only cover about 4% of the annual operating costs of runabout. It is a federally mandated program. Like I mentioned, the ADA requires that we operate it. So we project this 4%, what we call fare box recovery ratio, to decline over time as demand continues to increase. This is especially challenging since the ADA it mandates that we can't show a pattern of trip denials. So in other words, if somebody calls in for a ride to schedule a ride and we're unable to provide that service, any pattern of those trip denials would be a violation and could jeopardize our federal funding. So in either to continue to stay in compliance with the Americans with Disabilities Act, in light of this increasing demand, we either need more money to operate additional services or we must look at cutting services on the fixed route side. One of the mandates under the ADA is not only that it operates within 3/4 of a mile of a fixed route, but it has to operate during the same days and hours of operation. And that varies around the county in San Luis Obispo because of the demand of the campus and some of the commercial activities in the downtown area. They operate until 11:30. But in areas like, say, Paso Robles, they stop operating the fixed route service at 6:30. So we tailor the service to that time. The real challenge here is when I mentioned cutting service, it's not so much the frequency of service during the day, but it's the span of service. So if we go from hourly service on Route 9, for example, between Paso Robles and San Luis Obispo, twice or every 2 hours, that doesn't help us. Runabout still has to be available during that span. So in other words, we need to shorten the span of service during the day or cut back on services on the weekends. So we're proposing to set the runabout fares at twice the fixed route fare. For example, it's $2 to go from Morro Bay to San Luis Obispo. Currently, we charge $3.25 for on runabout services for an eligible rider. It would go from $3.25 to $4. So it's based on twice the base fixed route fare, and that's expressly permitted under the ADA. So we're just trying to get ourselves in the same line of what other transit agencies around the nation do. So one of the things we're talking about also is setting the cap at twice the regional day pass. In some instances right now, it costs you $6.25 to ride a really long trip from, say, San Miguel down to Santa Maria. That's $6.25. In other words, if you were to do that same trip on runabout, it could cost up to $12.50. We thought that'd just be too much for that one-way trip. So the RTAC, which is our Regional Transit Advisory Committee, Janine sits on that committee. That committee recommended we cap it at $10, which is twice the other fare. So we're looking at potentially implementing this fare increase on February 1st, 2015. We just finished up the set of three workshops we did in Grover Beach, Atascadero yesterday. Grover Beach on Tuesday, Atascadero yesterday. San Luis Obispo went until 6:30. We had a meeting there as well. But we're still taking comments. We've received, as of this morning, we've received 9 written comments from our riders. And again, we know every one of our riders. They have to go through an application process. We sent a letter out to every one of those people. And so of those 325 people we sent them out to, we've got 9 letters back. And I'll just share with you, this is the first time it's been said publicly, but of those 9, 4 of the people said, we understand that you need to increase your fares. We support it. 5 of them said it's going to be a hardship for us. But we're still taking comments, and we ask your citizens and other people who are interested to give us comments on how this could impact you. Our email is info@slorta.org, which stands for San Luis Obispo RTA. So again, info@slorta.org. You can call us at 781-4472, and you can send letters to our address, which is up on the board up here. This is all going to culminate. We'll take all the input we receive from the public meetings, from phone calls, from letters, and everything else, summarize it, present that to the RTA board on November 5th. We'll have a public hearing to consider this item. The RTA board is made up of a representative from each of the 7 cities in the county, as well as the 5 board of supervisors. So Mayor Irons sits on that committee, on that board, and he will hear this. So again, please, if you hear comments from people, encourage them to get those comments to us so that we can summarize those and share those with the board members. I'll take questions, but I do want to mention that I did talk with one of your board members here about, why is what's the increase? What's happening here? Is it purely demographics? We don't believe it is. One of the things that we know is that during the recession, a lot of social service agencies stopped operating their services and essentially dumped them on us to operate. So again, the demand has doubled in the last 6 years, and that's just not financially sustainable for us to keep operating more and more service. So I'll take questions if you please.
Okay. Sure. Stephen, you want to start?
Thank you. Since you take applications, you have a finite number of people that are using this service. You said 9 came out and spoke to you about it. How many, what is your total census of people using this?
Well, we have roughly 325 people who are currently eligible. Not all those people ride.
Oh. But there's 325 that signed applications.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Have you taken into consideration for those who are really going to be impacted by this? I mean, do you have a plan B for those people? Because with some of the special needs or special services that you provide, their incomes are really limited. And this could be gigantic for some of them from what I was reading on the fee charges.
No question. It's going to impact some people more than others. Services that stay within a community, which are the easiest to operate and the least expensive for us to operate, they're not going to go up much. They'll go from $225 to $250. So, you know, a ride within the city of Morro Bay would go from $2.25 to $2.50. Some of the longer trips are going to go up. I do want to mention that in the packets that we provided to you, the letters that we sent to each of the registrants, we provide some more information about that. But some of those long trips are very, very expensive. Our average subsidy per passenger trip is over $60. And subsidy per passenger trip is you take the total cost of the service, subtract the total fares for the year, divide that by the total number of rides, and it's over $60 per trip. Our board has found that to be too expensive, and it's not something that we can continue to do. So we're asking our riders to help us share in the additional costs that we're seeing in the service. But we do know that's going to impact some people. One of the things, when we get information from people, we're contacting them back to say, here's some other alternatives you have. One of the things that's very unique in this county is that most of the fixed route transit agencies will use your eligibility card and allow you to ride for free. We know that some people they can ride the regular big bus in one part of their trip, but coming back they may be tired, they may have groceries, something that could impede it's a barrier to them riding. So we offer that opportunity to ride for free. We're working with the city of Morro Bay to see if we can also provide that here. There's two fixed route providers in the county that don't currently do that, but I think we can come up with something where I push money back across the table so that those riders can ride the Morro Bay fixed route services when they can. But we know there's problems. There are other opportunities out there, too. There's Ride On operates some services, some senior services in particular. We're going to try to provide we're going to try to do what we can. One thing I don't mention up on the board up here is that on October 23rd, we're having a mobility management summit. We've contacted every social service agency in the county and invited them to come talk with us, to talk about what the needs of their users are and to try to find out what's the most cost-effective way of helping some of those folks get around. There's a lot of other information out there that people don't know about. If you're Medi-Cal, if you're a Medi-Cal patient and you're going on a trip that's Medi-Cal being paid for by Medi-Cal, or you're going to a Medi-Cal appointment, you can ride Ride On for free. And Medi-Cal will pay that trip. So we're trying to get that information out to people. Use the least expensive trip for you and the one that's most cost-effective for us to operate.
Thank you.
Thank you.
To follow up on what you just said, you sent a letter to your riders to inform them about this. Have you considered a letter explaining their options to them, like you just explained to us, if it's Medi-Cal and you can use this transportation going and you can use this transportation coming back? Is there something that could be put together to give them more information?
Every person who calls in, you have to call in advance to make a scheduled trip, we go through with them what their opportunities are, particularly if it's no cost to them. So those Medi-Cal trips, the first thing we ask is this a Medi-Cal trip? And if it is, we tell them, you can take Ride On, here's the phone number, call them, and it's free. So we do that already. We're already trying to manage that travel demand right now by talking with them one-on-one.
Well, thanks a lot for coming. And Phil, did you have one, Jen? Go ahead.
If this is not like Dial Ride, right? Do you have sort of a fixed schedule or a fixed sort of a route? I mean, you have so you can meet up with the other fixed routes.
No, this is Dial a Ride, but only dedicated. It's dedicated to people who otherwise can't use a fixed route. So it's not general public Dial a Ride. It's only for people with disabilities.
So it's just the route depends on the number of who's called that day.
Every trip is built based on the requests that come in. So everyone is unique.
If I'm understanding correctly, this is a door-to-door service.
Yes, it's door-to-door.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like you're trying to answer a whole bunch of questions, and hopefully it goes well. And I appreciate it, and I know people are watching at home. So thank you very much for coming and presenting.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And so with that, we are next presentation. is SVOCOG, Regional Transportation Plan.
Thank you. My name is Jessica Berry, and I am with the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments. I'm going to briefly go over what SVOCOG is and what we do, and then I'll turn it over to Jeff Brubaker, and he'll talk a little more about the Chorro Valley Trail Study, which is a study that SVOCOG has recently completed. The San Luis Obispo Council of Governments is a regional transportation planning agency, and our board is actually the same as the Regional Transit Authority Board. It's made up of all of the county supervisors plus a representative from each of the incorporated cities. So Mayor Irons also is on our board. And our board is primarily charged with making decisions about funding regional transportation projects. So we do provide transit funding. We also fund projects such as the Los Osos Valley Road Interchange, the Bob Jones Trail, and we do long-range planning projects such as the Chorro Valley Trail Study that Jeff will talk a little bit more about. We have a transportation advisory, a technical transportation advisory committee, a social services transportation advisory committee, and a citizen transportation advisory committee. And both Rob and Janine serve on our committees, so they're very involved with what we're doing here. So as I mentioned, we do transportation planning, we do project funding, we have a rideshare division that does our outreach. Right now is rideshare month, so our rideshare staff is doing a lot of outreach, promoting alternative modes of transportation through a hidden cash flow campaign. So if you don't know about that, check out Facebook. And go find some money. We also do a bike month and cipher outs to school programs and trip reduction planning for larger employers. We have data. Our data services include doing census data information. We have traffic, land use and traffic modeling services, and we generally do performance monitoring to keep track of how the investments we're making on our system, how they actually improve the system. Right now we're working on our regional transportation plan, which is a lot like a city's general plan. It is a multi-year, it's a long-range plan. This current version, the 2014, will go to 2035, and it establishes our priorities for regional projects throughout the county. And we also have to fiscally constrain this plan, so we try to look at how much money we predict we will have over the time frame and what projects we would like to spend that funding on. And we update this plan every 4 years. So this will be the 2014 update. We cover sustainable community strategy is a component of our transportation plan, where we look at where people live and where they travel for work and how to try to meet those needs to minimize driving. We have a section that deals with transportation demand management and transportation system management, highways, streets, and roads, public transportation, and an active transportation program that includes bicycle infrastructure, our safe routes to school programs, and pedestrian and regional trails. Right now with this update, this is just an example of the funding we get periodically for projects. So, for instance, we have funding on the Morro Bay, in Morro Bay here on the bridge project. That's a project that SVOCOG has funding on. And additionally, the city has been very successful in getting federal money from the Scenic Byway Program for that project as well, which is funding that SVOCOG does not program, but that as the byway coordinator for the region, we support the city's efforts to seek those funds. And this is sort of an example of what we get per year and the types of projects we spend funding on. Right now, we have, as part of our outreach effort for the Regional Transportation Plan, we have a project website, slowcogconnectingcommunities.com, where you can find information about the RTP update, and there is an interactive tool to help to gauge people's interest in what they would like us to spend our funding on. So we've called this our budgeting tool. We're also going to have a project tool so people can also put in their preference for actual built infrastructure. I like this project, or I don't like this project, or I think there needs to be something over here. But this tool that's online right now is specifically has to do with the funding that we receive and how we spend it. And so it asks the public questions about, would you want to spend more on this kind of project or less on this kind of project? And it lets you know as you're doing that, if you're going over budget, it gives you an option for trying to lower your budget or increase revenue through a couple of different options like a sales tax measure or a vehicle licensing fee, those kinds of ways that you could increase the budget if you were really committed to what you would like to see. And that provides us really valuable information for what we'll fund through this regional transportation program, regional transportation plan. And then we do a cycle of programming every 2 years. So we will take the information from this plan, and next fall we'll be doing programming for the first 2 years of that plan. So the RTP actually will encompass all of the work that we've done over the last 4 years developing this project. So a project that was identified in the 2010 Regional Transportation Plan was a desire to build a trail between San Luis Obispo and Morro Bay through the Chorro Valley. So back in 2010, there was a class at Cal Poly that did a sustainable mobility class that did some initial work looking at where a trail could possibly go. And then the same federal program that I referenced earlier, the Scenic Byway Program, we received a grant to do a trail study in that area. So then we did that trail study between November 2013 and August of this year. We hired a consultant. We worked closely with them to sort of develop alignments. We had a team of people from Morro Bay and San Luis Obispo and the county, and Supervisor Bruce Gibson was really involved with that study. So basically what we came up with, or what we did through this process, was decide on what we thought would be the most feasible alignment. At this point, it becomes more of a project of the county, and actually the county is actively working, and Jeff will cover the trail alignments when he speaks, but they're working now on what are the next steps and what can we do to start moving forward with the trail, because right now we have a study that tells us where it would make sense to build most likely, but the county will do that next step. So that's where we are with the Chorro Valley Trail Study. What we would do then in the regional transportation plan is we would probably identify a first phase for funding for construction. So we would put that in the plan. And that's how the trail study is actually related to the RTP. At this point, I will turn it over to Jeff and have him go over the trail alignment with you all, and then we can answer any questions.
Thanks. Jeff Brubaker with SLOCOG. let's see here. So as Jessica mentioned, Chorro Valley Trail Study did a lot of legwork in identifying the most feasible buildable segments of a Class 1 facility, a bike path from San Luis Obispo to Morro Bay. And these slides are going to kind of take you through step by step, moving from east to west, from SLO to Morro Bay, what the alignment would look like according to this plan. It's hard to see details here, but the main thing, if you can see, is the orange and green lines represent two different alignments, generally corresponding with each side of Highway 1. And this map zooms in on San Luis Obispo and thicker green line that you see there represents the preferred alignment. So you're probably more interested in the Morro Bay side, so I'm going to go a little bit quicker through these. But basically, the preferred alignment goes through Cal Poly campus. And again, I can answer any questions you have on the alignment. through the Cal Poly campus and stays on the north side of Highway 1. Serves Cuesta College, but it stays on the north side of Highway 1 and traverses the frontage of the Men's Colony right by Highway 1. And a key point here is that it crosses over to the south side of Highway 1, right by the County Operations Center, Camp SLO area. And so what this allows it to do is to, up here. What this would allow is for access to Chorro Regional Park and also to Cuesta College and capture both of those destinations. It stays on the south side. The whole corridor, fortunately, there's not a lot of landowners, and a lot of the land is owned by Cal Poly or by a public agency. So that's one side of things where you can avoid private property, not too many easements to acquire. So right now we're on the south side of Highway 1 going west from Cuesta College. The terrain is pretty friendly right there. And then as you're heading into Morro Bay, you're still on the south side and you meet up with Quintana and the plan ends at Quintana and South Bay. So from there, the obvious solution is to use the bike lanes to get to downtown Morro Bay. So that's just a preferred alignment right now. Things could change as the county moves forward with the environmental phase. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have. Here's the final slide. This intersection, I know Mayor Irons has mentioned that before as being a key intersection that will have to be looked at in more detail as the design phase moves forward. So I think that's it. With that, we'd be happy to answer any questions.
All right, we'll start down here with you, Deb. Do you have any questions?
I just want to say your last point is very well taken, because that intersection there in Quintana underneath the freeway, and that's just a real treacherous place. I would stop it a little farther down, then let them not all the cars and all the bicyclists and the trail and everything converge in that one little treacherous place, because it's tough. So I'm glad they're going to be talking about reconfiguring that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Jan, do you have any? No. Questions? Steve?
Yes. I noticed the only conflict you come into with Highway 1 is when you cross from the north to the south. Are you planning to grade separate that intersection with a pedestrian bike bridge, or is the idea just to work yourself across the street at the intersection?
Let me go back to that slide.
I think it's near the men's colony.
Yeah. It's right in front of Cuesta.
Yeah.
So you're just going to keep them at grade crossing the...
Jessica, do you want to answer that question?
Yeah. We actually were very specific, made a point of not creating new crossings. So there's a signal there, which is why we chose that location. We actually did, and when we met with Camp Slow, they suggested there's a culvert for Dairy Creek. Is that right? Dairy Creek? Got that right. Yeah, so there's a culvert there for Dairy Creek that they are open. It's overbuilt. It's really large. We actually walked through it, and it's substantial. And they suggested we use that. So we definitely keep that as an option, but we would, as an interim solution, we would definitely have route people to the signal and have them cross at the light.
Well, it's just, I assume this is mainly going to be for bike use as opposed to pedestrian use. And usually they don't like to stop. I think you may find changing the grade, not working at the street level, if they'll allow you to use the culvert in good weather and things of that nature, might be a point well taken to do so. I also noticed that in the San Luis Obispo area, it pretty much stays away from Highway 1 as it runs parallel to it. I'm not that familiar with the roads out there. Is there spots people can get on? Let's say they're not going to Cal Poly and want to work their way back to Santa Rosa at some point. Is there spots along that trail that you can get off it, or are you totally in a corridor that takes you out to the point where you hit Highway 1 out there near Cuesta?
It's do you have the pointer? Let's see if I can work the pointer. No, okay. So right here is, I believe that's where Stenner Road is, Creek Road. So this path goes actually along. Oh, you're in the way. let's see. Sorry. Oh, I got to figure out how to use this again. Okay, so this is actually an existing road, which was why we identified it, and Cal Poly was most comfortable with that, though they have expressed a preference to be out here. But this would be an interim solution that it's a shame. Right now, bicyclists can use it and do But if we would, ideally, there would be a separated facility along that.
So there is. It's following an existing road, you're saying.
It is. It's following
an existing road. I mean, for emergency vehicles and stuff like this, I wasn't sure if you were lording them out into the wilderness.
That's a good point. No, it's yes. And then you could get back down onto Highway 1
here.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, the reason we avoided this area is actually this is a really the hill is very close to Highway 1 right there. Mm. So in order to really create a separated facility, you would have to cut into that hillside considerably.
No, I appreciate that. Yeah. I just wondered for emergency access when you had that so far away from Highway 1, and I'm not that familiar with the roads up in that area. Yeah. Thank you. You answered my question.
Any conflict with the men's colony having people ride in front of it?
They expressed some concern, for sure. And one of the things that we actually ended up... let's see. So where the men's colony is, we're actually trying to put the path. It's not technically on their property. We actually made a point of avoiding actual men's colony property. It's Camp Slow's property, and Camp Slow is actually very fond. They've been very supportive of the trail study. Some people that we met with at the men's colony were more comfortable than others, but they did express a general concern. Right now, bicyclists can ride along Highway 1. There's a wide shoulder, and bicyclists do use it. So that may be an area where we look at just keeping people on Highway 1 if we need to. But it is we did make a point of trying to stay out of their property.
Thank you.
Dave, do you have any questions?
If you can tell us, I'm a little concerned, or not concerned, but interested in what the men's colony's concerns were.
The way I think of it is that they are comparing their facility to what an ideal facility might be like, which is that there isn't a major highway right in front of it. So what they're concerned about is us creating another facility that they have to then worry about if there's an escape.
Thank you.
Understanding, okay, thank you. Presentation's wonderful, but I do have a question. In terms of this study, looking at it, is there a larger plan looking at the bicycle path or the walking path north of Morro Bay in terms of that study with the scenic coast byways? And then what's the timeline with this project are we looking at? Are we trying to link up those two bike paths in any way? You can say yes or no. But then also, what's our timeline when you're doing this study and designing it?
From this study to construction, I'll start with that question. It's a long timeline. We don't have funding identified right now for the actual construction. And the way that the county works is that they don't enter into another phase, so they won't go from this to environmental until they have all the money they need to do the environmental phase. And then after they do that, they get together all the money they need to do the engineering. And then they do that, and then they get together all the money they need for construction. So it's a very long process. We are seeing at the regional level that there's less and less funding coming into the region. There's a type of funding that we used to have that could fund projects like this called transportation enhancement, and we don't get that money anymore. It goes to the state now. And in our last competitive, all the cities went after money from the state for projects like this, and none came to our region. So there's less and less funds. That is one of the reasons why when you look at that budgeting tool on the website, we ask people how they feel about a supplemental funding source, because there's less money to actually build it. I think, though, that this trail has a lot going for it in that there are only 11 landowners in the whole corridor, and some of them are more welcoming of the project. So I think it's, and because there is a county supervisor that's very interested in it. So I think it's more likely than some trails in our region to be built. I think what we would probably do is start with the Cal Poly to Cuesta piece, and then just past that, there's actually a piece of land that belongs to the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and that will have public access on it. that's a goal that they have. So those two pieces, I think, would happen sooner. And then, I'd love to say that we could see these happen in 5 to 10 years.
Have you started with, even with this preliminary design, costs?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We actually did develop cost estimates for every piece of it. And it is very, and that's actually all the little call-out boxes that you see are design elements that have costs associated with them. So our consultants figured out what the design elements had to be so that they could estimate the costs. And it's pretty much the same that we would estimate region-wide, which is $1.5 to $2 million a mile. So they're not cheap. Trails are not cheap. And then as far as the north, from Morro Bay North, I think I'll hand that over to Jeff because he's your regional planner for this area.
So similar to this plan, as you may know, or you may have participated in, the Coastal Trail Master Plan. That has been finalized now, and the county basically has a number of trail projects that they would be the lead agency on, and they have to think about prioritizing in terms of process and the limited funding that's available. So they've got this trail project. They're starting work now on the Templeton to Atascadero connector. There's also the Bob Jones Trail and then the Morro Bay to Cayucas connector. So it'll all depend on, how fast the environmental phase goes for the Morro Bay to Cayucas connector, and then the key top question, which is programming, funding, where will the funds come from? So as Jessica alluded to, there's now an active transportation program at the statewide level. That's a lot of funds, but they're competitive, and we realized in this last application cycle how competitive they are because our region just missed out on getting that kind of funding. So the environmental and design process takes a few years, but then the key question that for now leaves the question of when can it get built unanswered is when will the funding be found for it?
Okay, no, thank you. No, I understand that it's kind of ambiguous simply, on the funding question. Mm-hmm. Okay, I don't think we have any more questions. But thank you very much for presenting, and from my vantage point, I can't wait for this to be done. I think it'd be great to be able to get to San Luis without worrying about getting hit by a car. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. And so with that, we're done with our presentations. We move on to public comment period. And so do we have any folks from the public who'd like to come up and make public comment? Seeing nobody stepping up to the plate. We move on. And so we move on to our first item, and this consent calendar. So we could go through this and just vote on accepting the consent calendar, but I would like to break it apart because I have a couple questions. First, we have the approval of the minutes. Rob, I have a question for you for our minutes. I don't know. Does anybody else have any questions about minutes? Okay, Steve, you want to go first?
I was just going to state that I noticed my name wasn't present for the last meeting, and I was at the meeting. So,
it wasn't the
Thank
spirit
you.
Of Steve?
What was that?
Okay, Stephen was there. And the question I had was in the first public comment, and this was when Ms. Betty Winholtz expressed concern with the continued poor taste and smell of the water. Rob, could you speak to the taste and smell of our water citywide?
As most everybody knows, the majority of the city's water, if not all, during this time of year especially, comes from the State Water Project. We were alerted from the State Water Project that there was going to be a taste and odor issue, and we put that information up on our website. It's caused by algal blooms in the State Water Project, blue-green algae, and the decomposition of that algae creates a couple of organic compounds that don't smell or taste very good. They are not hazardous to human health, nor are they regulated compounds. So they are an aesthetic compounds, or secondary constituent to water quality. So they're not regulated like a health issue is. Even given that fact, our suppliers of state water, the CCWA, Central Coast Water Authority, did put granulated activated carbon filters at the backside of the treatment plant to try to knock down that taste and odor issue. They just couldn't remove all of it because of these are record levels of this MIB, or I'm not even going to try to pronounce the organic compound that it is, in the water supply due to low flows in the state water project. So the water is moving much slower than it would normally be because of the lack of water in the state. We're in the third year of a very substantial drought and warm temperatures. So we had this taste and odor issue. It, in my taste, tasting the water out of our tap at the office, I don't taste it anymore in our water supply. I know some people still taste it, but maybe my taste buds have been burnt out. I don't know. One of the things that they recommended was a Brita-type filter, or, you know, one of those household carbon filters could be used that remove most of that leftover taste and odor. If you have an RO system in your house, it removes all the taste and odor out of it. Like I said, I haven't noticed anything in the last couple of weeks with the water from the tap at the office, so it's pretty much gone. I think Ms. Woodnells asked if we could get a credit from the State Water Project for that water. The answer is absolutely not. It's not a primary.
We need to approve the minutes, so could we have a motion to approve the minutes?
I move to approve the minutes.
And a second?
I second.
And all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And I'm assuming that is as corrected.
Right.
Thank you.
As corrected. Thank you. So minutes pass as corrected. Thank you, Rob. And with that, Rob, you about there?
Yes.
Okay. So the director's report, would you like to speak? Well, actually, let's go through. You want to start down here, Dave? Do you have any questions about the director's report?
Not at this time.
Steve? Not at this
time. Ron?
No.
Okay.
I didn't have any questions about the words in here, but it confused me when the numbers didn't add up to what your totals were. And so I would like, as we go through there, I hope I'll bring it up, and hopefully you can explain to me why some of the totals aren't the same. Thank you.
Oh, that, as an English teacher, that's called an anticipatory set, Rob. She is she's whetting your interest there.
Yes,
she
is.
In his mind right now, he's like, what didn't add up? Okay, Deb, did you have any questions?
No.
Okay. I do. Rob, opening up to on the page 2 of 4 on the bottom, talking about the collection system, and the last item on the page, continue to work on manhole and collection systems rehab projects. My note is to check and replace manholes, or what's going on with us?
So we have old manholes in town that leak. So we do repair of those. So the repair generally consists of grouting around the rings that stack up. Sometimes we do epoxy coating on the inside of the manhole if it is particularly old or aggressive waste. If there's a lot of turbulence in the wastewater, they can generate some compounds that react with concrete. They have to be epoxy lined. So as wastewater cascades, it gets oxygen in the wastewater, generates hydrogen sulfide compounds that react with concrete, and we don't like wastewater reacting with concrete. So we'll do that lining. Our collection system repairs, we do much of that work in-house, so we do point repairs. So something, let's say, if it's a line that was 60 feet long or 50 feet long, we consider that a point repair. We don't need to go out and contract that work. We have the ability to do those repairs in-house, as long as we don't get too deep, because we don't have all the shoring equipment we would need on deep lines. So there was a leaking sewer line on the bridge on Beachcomber. We dug that up, replaced that line. and stop the drip from the bottom of the bridge on a beachcomber. You didn't want to get dripped on from that water source.
Talk about things that roll downhill. Huh?
Yeah.
Okay. Another question I had was on page 4-4 on the first box, looking down at street sidewalks, talking about the Morrow Creek Bridge. I see the bridge is proceeding forward per the schedule. Bids for construction are due on October 14th. Is this a delay or are we on time with this project?
We're on time with this project.
With the final build out at the end of this next summer?
Next summer. So we received our bids in on the 14th, which was a couple of days ago. We opened those bids, and you can, on our bid page, you can get to all the bids. Our low bid was by Sousa Construction at about $1.5 million for the project, over the engineer's estimate and over the budget that we have to actually construct this project. $360,000-ish. So we are going to work with our funding partner and see if there's more money available. If we don't come up with $360,000, we don't throw the entire project away. We rebid it, and we do some design changes, maybe do some phasing, so not everything gets built at the same time. We, talking with other cities, most other cities are seeing their bids come in at higher than we had experienced over the last several years. We can see the economy's improving. There are more jobs being bid, therefore higher bid prices. Contractors don't have to be quite so competitive to stay busy. So we're getting higher bid prices on a lot of construction projects these days. So we still plan on awarding construction. We have a deadline of December 31st to award construction. Even if we rebid, we plan on meeting that deadline for our funding deadline.
And another question I had, and this is a little bit of public outreach that you might want to do. If you could explain on page...
And you fill out a work order type form. It gets sent to our maintenance staff, and they perform that work. So... That's what that is for.
So I sense maybe a contest, a naming contest for those out in the public.
I think
if you want to name
something.
This website, let us know. Hey, come help. Something like that.
Pothole alert.
Okay, my last question. I'm sorry to belabor the director's report. On page 1-4, looking at your graph you have on the front page, do you have that yet?
Yes.
And then looking... And this kind of, I think, in a way, goes with what Jan's talking about. If we look at the first column, June 2014, we go down RO, reverse osmosis, state water, the total is 34.59. Do I think that's 34.59 million gallons in a month? In that month?
Yes.
And then looking down below, total city use, the numbers are more than that. Is there, could you explain this?
I need to add some more words to this table. I can see.
If you want to wait till next time, that's totally fine.
This should deserve some explanation. So the top part of the sheet is million gallons per day. The bottom part of the sheet is in gallons or million gallons total. The bottom is million gallons per day. One's daily. One's monthly. So the reason why the columns don't add up is to get this table to kind of fit in the format that we're in, I gave you everything since the last time you saw this table, but I kept the totals in there that incorporate the entire year. So we do need a few more footnotes and some more description on this, or maybe even a better way to show this might be graphically, be a little bit better rather than numbers to show. But as you can see, we have dropped down from our high in July. And as you notice, from June, July, we did increase water usage. I don't attribute that to people not conserving water. I attribute that to more people being in town and more people using water. If we were to break out, and I can give you that information also, just residential water usage, we're talking about 65 gallons per person per day, not the 112. So this is an overall aggregate water use for the entire city divided by the population. So this is the way one of our agencies likes it reported to them. And then other agencies like it report, they like us to break it out. But the average residential customer water use has really dropped. I mean, you can see that as we move on towards September, where we're dropped down to even aggregating in the total commercial and municipal and industrial, or municipal and irrigation, we're down to 101.59 gallons per person per day. So we can see a reduction in that. That really isn't probably a major conservation use. There's fewer people in town as we go into the fall. So I think we're about maxed out for the most part. Everybody probably can do a little bit more, but everybody's doing a very good job with residential water conservation. At 65 gallons per person per day, that's very low. That's almost at what the state would consider minimum baseline supplies for indoor-only water use.
I got a quick question, because I know it keeps getting thrown out that the population of this town is 10,000 plus, and I don't understand how the city actually counts what that population is, unless it's voter registration or they're using this as their primary address. Because you're right, and it's not just tourists. It's a lot of houses, especially up in, well, even North Morro Bay and even in the downtown, people that live in the valley come over in the summer. And it's got to be double. And you brought up a very good point. I just wondered how they ever came to this magical 10,000 number is what's living here at any given point.
That's based on U.S. Census data and their estimates for the out years. So
and that's what you're using to calculate gallons per person per day.
Exactly.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That can make your numbers honestly useless for that particular graphic. So
yeah.
Thank you.
And I hope I explained the totals. No.
No. No. In the column it says total. For the reverse osmosis, it says 9.44. But you add up all those numbers.
How much water we're using and whatnot, and looking at how much does it cost. That's going to be good to know. So, using this graph in the coming months at our meetings, talking about people are paying your fair share and what the it actually costs. So with that was all my questions. I'm sorry to belabor the director's report so long. Does anybody else have any further questions before we move on? Could we have a is this a motionable item? Do we need to?
It's a receive and file, so,
okay, so
we don't need
file.
It. I just want to make one more point.
Please.
Since you brought up the water rates, just we'll probably be bringing those to PWEB in January or February. We may have to have a special meeting first part of the year to start that process. The consultant recommends what was probably going to happen is if we brought it to the Public Works Advisory Board this month or next month, there would be a kind of a gap before we got it to council because of holiday times. So they recommend once you kind of start the public process, you keep it rolling instead of going dormant for a few weeks and then rolling them back out again.
No, that's good to know. And more than anything, we just need to put out to the public that this is coming and that we're going to want public input talking about these water rates. Okay, and so we move on. We don't have any old business, and we move on to new business. C1, Morro Bay Transit and Trolley Operations and Management Request Proposals. So, Janine, this is you.
Thank you, and good evening. The current agreement with MV Transportation for our city's transit services, our Morro Bay Transit deviated fixed route and our seasonal trolley service, expires at the end of this year. And so what staff did earlier, late in the summer, was put together, developed an RFP, specifications and a draft agreement to include with that, and put that out for distribution at the end of August, August 25th. And proposals were to be due September 22nd of this year. We, as part of our outreach, we included it not only on our website in our transit division section, but we reached out to CALACT, who is a statewide transit organization. They have a website that posts notices for jobs as well as for RFP services such as this. So we had them post that on their site with a link to our site that they could get the RFP specifications there. In addition, we also had sent copies directly of the RFP specifications to 9 transit operators. And we we looked into Northern California and Southern California, where obviously more population and have more transit providers that provide services in those areas. So we felt we had a pretty good number of potential bidders out there for our RFP. And once the deadline was due, we only had one submittal, and that was for our current provider, MV Transportation. And what we did was we continued kind of along the process. We reviewed the proposal to determine whether they were responsive to the specifications, and we feel that they've complied with those submittal requirements and that they have the technical, organizational, management and financial capabilities to continue providing the services to the city. Oops. And for their cost proposal, I've attached that in with your staff report, but on the first page under the fiscal impact is the cost proposal, the rates for the 5 years that are proposed for the transit service and the trolley services. And you can see that the cost overall for that first year is only going to increase less than 0.9% over what we are currently paying. So about 1% for Morrow Bay Transit and 0.7%, which is very good. CPI is going to be higher than that, so like that number. Additionally, as part of the fiscal impact, the city receives Transportation Development Act funds from the state, and it's those funds that are used to provide the transit services. So currently, both the trolley and Morrow Bay Transit are fully funded with TDA funds, and no general funds are required to supplement the budget. Staff is recommending that the board consider the proposals, consider the RFP, and recommend that the City Council award MB14-T1 RFP to MV Transportation. There is an alternative option that we put in here, which is to rebid the services. However, there's a couple of issues with that. One is that, as I mentioned, the existing contract ends at the end of this year, and we are in our extension phase, so we have no more
company on the service. They've been in business for 35 years, and they service a lot of different communities. I think there was something like 600 towns or cities that they service and things. So they obviously know what they're doing and are fairly successful at it. The only comment I want to make is I think you're seeing a trend here with the economy picking up in various places that people aren't so anxious to take out these, to get involved in these smaller towns and smaller communities with smaller budgets and projects going on. And I don't know, I agree with you that I don't think that going out and rebidding I think it's a waste of time. You've already gone to everybody you know and they've said no. So I don't know how the city looks forward to solving that problem, getting people to come in and take over some of these projects. But I did like this company based on what I saw online.
And to just kind of comment on your last point there, we are a small area. We are a very small contract. And so for a company who's not already in the county or already within, very close to this area, just outside in Monterey or down south into Santa Barbara County, it's very hard to look at a contract like this and the startup that would be involved and the movement and then the management you need to bring into it. So it's probably likely that there were several of the transit providers who looked at it and just it didn't pencil out for them. As far as looking forward, what we have done in the past and we will certainly look to towards future contracts is trying to work together with some of the other transit providers, RTA, Slow City, and if all of our agreements are kind of ending at the same time, work on a joint RFP process. We have participated in something like that in the past, and that's a way of trying to bring in more people because you have more contracts, you have more work, you have a larger location, and it financially sometimes can make more sense. So that is something that we would be looking towards the future in that regard.
Just real quickly, it looks basically for Morro Bay Transit and the trolley, you're looking at about $180K a year for the service. And best I could tell, the service purely provides the drivers their compensation, their benefits, and their supervision. Is that correct? I mean, they're not involved in the vehicles themselves, the maintenance of the vehicles, or anything else.
Correct. This is just for drivers and the day-to-day management of the services. The city provides the vehicle maintenance aspect, planning, overall planning, marketing, those kinds of things. So.
And I saw nothing wrong with this. I think, you know, if this is what you've been using and going forward, the only question I have, and it's always the engineer in me, is have you ever looked at how many man hours are being provided for that $180,000? I mean, I don't know if there's four people working here half-time. I don't know what it takes to staff the transit and the trolley in terms of total man hours in a year. Mm-hmm. For me, that's the only way I could be able to judge or gauge, is this an effective contract or not? You know, if it's costing you $100 an hour, you know, to have a driver and they're paying them $15 an hour, maybe this isn't the best use, but I just don't know with what I see here. Have you guys ever looked at how many man hours actually goes? And not the management, I'm just talking the purely the driver, as opposed to saying if the city had their own, you know, hired. And don't get me wrong, these guys could probably hire people cheaper than you can in the overall scheme of things, but have you ever looked at it in that light?
Every month, as part of the monthly report, the vehicle actually part of the cost component is a vehicle service hour component, which are the driver hours.
Oh.
And annually, we have to provide to the state controller's report. We're reporting mainly budgetary information, but there is a section in there that goes over ridership, hours of service, and then there's a full-time equivalent in employee hours for the whole system that takes into account not just the drivers and the management from the contract side, but my time, finances time, the city mechanics time, and that is something that's also looked at. And then ultimately there's the annual audit that's done and the fare box ratio, which I know you guys have heard that before. And that's a requirement of the state for our Transportation Development Act to have that ratio be above a certain number, above 10%. And that goes to efficiency and effectiveness. So,
well, I guess the question then, if I took the annual VSH and divided by the vehicle service hour fee, would that give me a pretty good idea of how long you had a driver working here?
Mm-hmm.
Do you follow what I mean?
And these numbers are based
the
on,
yeah.
In the RFP specifications, we indicate.
I'll make the motion to accept the proposal and recommend to City Council for approval.
I'll second it.
Could we have a vote, please?
Aye.
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 All those in favor say aye, and that's a unanimous approval. Thank you. Janine, thank you for the presentation.
Janine, this is sort of an aside. Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea yet of whether you're going to continue the Saturday bus service or not?
We are not going to probably take a look at that until at least 1 year of its operation so that we can go through a full year and then we can look at the numbers specifically to see whether one of our concern or potential concerns, which we saw when the dial-a-ride we went and extended to Saturday service, was people just kind of shifting the day and the week that they rode, and so not generating necessarily any new riders, but shifting the number of riders, now spreading it across 6 days instead of five, which you're adding more expenses, but you're not taking in more revenue, so your fare box ratio goes down. So that's something that we will be looking, but it won't be until at least a year after we started that, and that was at the end of March. So it'd probably be sometime maybe April or May when we would start looking at that and probably bring something back to this board and the council of a review of that.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Janine. And with that, before we move, we have future business. Rob, you and I talked about having a meeting on December 4th. One item that we have coming up on the future agenda, I'm going to be stepping down as chair at this next meeting, and so we need to be voting on a new chair and a vice chair then. So Rob and I, the other day I brought this up, but it was too late to put on new business that of this election. And so Rob and I yesterday talked about December 4th having a emergency meeting. So with that, Rob, is that sound right? And
so you have a regularly scheduled meeting for December 18th.
Yes.
I guess you'd have to decide whether you want to cancel that meeting, if we then decide if we needed that.
And well, there's two questions that go along with that, because looking at our adjournment on.
And we're not having a tour again,
so,
okay, in the dark.
So that was the question. So with that in mind, folks, if we wanted to not have our December 18th meeting and do the meeting on December 4th, and then we could, one item that would be on the agenda is an election of a new chairperson and vice chair of this committee, and then whatever else is on the agenda. But then we don't have to worry about the tour. We've already done this. So that's still good, Rob, that day?
December 18th is still good. I believe the 4th is still good. But I would need to hear if the board is available. And as an alternative, we typically elect officers after the first of the year when we seat the new board member. That would be also an alternative. We could work with our vice chair, leading the chair of the chairing the meeting, and we could elect or what we did with Planning Commission when this situation occurred, the chair stepped down, the vice chair ran the meeting, the vice chair didn't show up at one of the meetings, so the first order of business was to select of the remainder who would run the meeting, and that also worked. So I think this board has several options to talk about. I mean, I don't think we need to spend a whole lot of time on this. I mean, I think it'll be pretty easy for you guys to decide what you want to do. But I think the options are to continue with normal procedures, elect the chair once the new person is seated after the first of the year, hold a special meeting in lieu of the December 18th meeting, or just keep the December 18th meeting and elect a chair at that time. So I'll leave it up to the board.
Okay. Folks, if
I think
have anything
Ron,
to say? Well, yeah, we're going to start. Ron, what would you like to say?
Well, you just said that normally the city council selects the new members in January. So if you're stepping down in December, I would think that the vice chair could run a meeting for one meeting, and then in the January PWAB meeting, the new seated board, PWAB, would select their chair and vice chair then.
Okay.
So there isn't really a need for making a selection now, other than if you're stepping down before that last meeting, then the vice chair would run the meeting.
Okay, and that's going to be totally fine. Because I brought it up because you hadn't been here for a couple
I know.
Minutes. Well, no, that's totally fine.
Personal reasons.
Well, then that's totally fine. So what we'll do, that's true. So who knows if Noah gives up on his spot and lets me sit there, so I'll still get to come to the meetings. But thank you very much. And so, Ron, next meeting, you guys will decide if we hold a December 18th meeting, and then your next meeting after that will be in February.
Probably we'll have to have a meeting in January, I guess, with the rate. We'll hold a special meeting in January for the rate analysis.
And so at that meeting, and that's where we would be, or you would be, establishing a new chair and vice chair. Okay. And with that, the meeting is now adjourned. Don't anybody show up on December 18th wanting to go on the trolley tour. That's not going to happen.
It's going to be dark.
Yes.
Well, there might be Carolyn cop cars that night.
We could go sing with them.
They're the week before.
Okay.
So you can get on the trolley the week before with the Carolyn cops and sing.
All right, and with that, and we close our meetings, and we'll see you guys at the next meeting. Thank you.
David? They've updated their plan, and they're talking about this. They recognize the terrible situation. On the road, I'm nervous, right?